Good night, everyone. This is Esperanza Ray, your host with New Consciousness, New World. Welcome back to our show. Today, we have a special guest. But before we touch on our special guest for tonight, let me tell you about a special guest coming up in October. Her name is Rana Prince, and she has the feature film on science and spirit of our connection called Sacred Journey of the Heart, an inspiring new documentary produced by filmmaker Rana Prince, investigates the healing power of the heart and proposes that we are in the midst of creating the biggest shift of consciousness of all times. So tune in to October because we're having her on the show. For now, let's go ahead and meet our host for tonight, Dr. Eric Pearl, from the Reconnection. However, Dr. Pearl today is here to talk about his new book, Solomon Speaks, on Reconnecting Your Life, written by Dr. Eric Pearl and Frederick Ponslov. Eric, I definitely want to hear about your book because I've been reading it. Before we get started, though, I would love to hear a little bit on the Reconnection itself, because I actually... you know, when you were going to be on our show, I decided that I needed to get a session and know for myself the process of the Reconnection. So tell us, our viewers, about that a little bit, please.
Reconnection and reconnective healing?
Yes.
Well, basically, I guess the best way to start is to start with how we discovered it, because I think within the discovery lies the beginning of our insights of what it is.
Right.
And the background story of that is that I was practicing as a doctor of chiropractic for 12 years when one night I was awakened by a very bright light. I opened my eyes to see what it was. It wasn't anything seemingly spiritual or metaphysical. It was simply the lamp next to my bed. For some reason, it had decided to self-ignite. Just woke me up and I figured, you know, well, that's probably just something electrical, like an electrical short, except shorts usually turn things off, and I'd never heard of an electrical long, but there it was. And at the same time, though, there was a very clear, distinct feeling that somebody was in my home and that I had been being watched while I was asleep. I can't tell you how uncomfortable of a feeling that is. Let's just say I got up with a knife, a can of pepper spray, and my Doberman pincher, and I went hunting through the house. After about 15 minutes of not finding anyone, I told myself that it had to be my imagination, even though it didn't feel like it, and I went back to sleep. But that Monday, when I went into my office, some things took an interesting turn. What I would normally do with my patients is I would adjust their spine, and then I'd finish with them lying on their back. I'd tell them to close their eyes and relax and let the adjustments settle in. And as I did it on that day, when my patients would open their eyes, seven of my patients independently of one another, not knowing anyone else had said this and not knowing of my experience a few nights before, insisted that they felt that someone was standing in the room when they had their eyes closed, that someone was watching them. They also felt sets of hands, multiple sets of hands, resting on their body. They could tell me that they could feel where my hands were, even when I was inches to feet to yards away from them. I, of course, didn't believe them. I had them close their eyes. I held my hands sort of aimed towards them, and the different areas I would aim towards, they could tell me where I was. Their bodies would go into involuntary movements, fingers moving, toes moving, arms and legs jerking, tiny little muscles in their forehead or in their chin, little independent muscles we cannot move intentionally. These involuntary muscles would start to ripple, taking on the appearance that water takes on. If you drop a pebble into it, it would pull at their eyebrows, pull at their lips. Their eyes would dart back and forth. When they opened their eyes, they would report seeing colors they'd never seen before, smelling fragrances of flowers they had never before smelled. And they started reporting and demonstrating healings, real healings. They were getting up out of wheelchairs, vision and hearing returning. They were coming in days later showing laboratory results where their cancer tumors had vanished. Children with cerebral palsy or epilepsy were suddenly able to walk, to run, to play, not have seizures any longer, not need medications, My patients would call and ask what I had done. The kids' parents would call, ask what I had done. Their doctors would call, ask what I had done. I said, I didn't do anything, and don't tell anybody, which went over probably about as big as the United States government trying to just say no to drugs. So soon, everyone started coming in from everywhere, going, I'll have what she had. And the next thing we know, people are asking me to teach this. And I said, teach it. You have got to be insane. I'm standing there, really looking like I've lost my mind. I'm waving my hands in the air like a fool. And people are having healings. How in the world can I teach something like this? I said, you go outside, wave your hands in the air. Let me know what your neighbors have to say about you. But more and more, my patients continued to call me. When they left my office, they got home. They said they pulled up in front of their house, and before they could hit the button in their car to open their automatic garage door, it opened by itself. Or they walked inside their house, their lamp or their computer or their TV started turning itself on and off and on and off. They felt sensations in their hands. They would hold their hands near someone in their family, and the grandfather could walk again after the stroke, or the uncle regained his hearing. And that's when we began to recognize that once we interact with this expanded spectrum of, I call it a spectrum of healing frequencies, what science today refers to as the reconnective healing spectrum, once we interact with it, it changes us somehow in a way that not only allows us to receive our own healings, but it allows us to facilitate healings for others.
Yes. Very powerful. Very powerful. The interesting part, though, this is what I find very, very interesting, is that you had no previous knowledge or cared for healing of this type, and you were very skeptic about it. It actually took you quite a while to really, I guess, go and trust these feelings, and how did that go about happening?
Well, I never followed any particular interest in this arena. I mean, I didn't study any healing techniques. I used to, you know, I wasn't closed-minded to the possibility. I mean, I felt, you know, I think most people fall into one of three groups, or at least up until that point. They either believe in it, they don't believe in it, or they're somewhere in the middle, maybe open to the possibility. I think I was probably in that group, but this was weird. I mean, this was strange. It was twice a week, approximately, I would wake up and there'd be a light turned on somewhere in my house, a door open that I know I'd closed before I'd gone to sleep. I'm holding my hands near patients. These things are happening. And it's like, and most people usually ask me, you know, when I talk about this, how do I deal with skeptics? And my response is that once you've handled your own skepticism, nobody else's really seems to matter. I mean, it's the funniest thing. It just doesn't matter. I knew that I was standing in the presence of something huge. People say to me, well, were you scared? You must have been scared. I said, you know, it sounds as if it could have been a frightening experience, but fear really in that space is a choice. I was more in a state of awe or wonder standing in front of something very huge. You know, I remember growing up and watching, you know, once in a while an old Western on television, and the parson would come out and say, talk about God-fearing Christians. And I used to think, God-fearing? Who in their right mind, what kind of a God would want us to fear? A God. And there wasn't fear, there was awe. And you could see how awe could be mistaken as that. And it actually turns out that the term God-fearing is really a mistranslation of the original Hebrew. The word that was used means awe. It means wonder.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense, because I don't have that concept of God either. I mean, granted, when you're a child and you're brought up in a denominational, you know, church, then you believe those things, or those things are taught. However, my personal experience has greatly changed once I started getting into meditation. And it was like things just starting opening up. And what you're doing basically is very along the lines of what's happening on the planet right now. We're moving into another level of consciousness. I strongly believe that. And there's a need for more new things that are not worried about whether we use Reiki, whether we use this or whether we use that, but just the ability to be able to heal, period.
Right. It's sort of bringing holism into a field that's been misnamed holistic. When we've been practicing energy healing techniques, we've been focusing on subsets, fragments of the energy that's been here. I mean, everything in our world, as we have taught up until now, has been energy. We exist four-dimensionally. The four dimensions are height, width, depth, and time. And in quantum physics, they often illustrate this, if you can allow yourself to visualize this, as a balloon or a bubble. And they go, here's our tiny little balloon or bubble of existence in this huge, vast, endless, multidimensional universe. Our little balloon or bubble is comprised of height, width, depth, and time. And everything that's been inside of our balloon here has been energy. So when we've been focusing in on our techniques, such as Reiki and Qigong and the new techniques, the old ones, each technique is like, it's like focusing in on the part of the heavens with a telescope. You just get a part. So then we go out looking for more parts. But the universe is not linear. It's not equal to just the sum of its parts. There's much, much more. So even when we focus in on each part, we never get the whole picture. When we're willing to let go of the focus of technique that says you move your hands clockwise, another one says counterclockwise. This one says bring the energies north. This one says bring the energies west. When we let go of those techniques, that need for control, the limitation that comes with that also releases, and we're able to access the entirety of the energy that's been here. That is truly a more holistic, because of the whole, approach to energy healing than we've taken so far. But once we're willing to do that, once we're willing to overcome the ego that frames our little energy healing technique certificates on our walls and the ones we paid an extra $250 for so we can call ourselves a master, as if you could buy mastery, once we've let go of that, the first gift is that we access the entirety of the energy. But in quantum physics, as we understand today, here is coming a second gift, because time is moving faster. Time is moving faster in all directions at once. Time is actually opening up and expanding. So if you visualize our little bubble of time, height, width, depth, and time, as opening up and expanding, well, if you blow up a balloon, as it expands, it actually becomes thinner. It becomes more permeable to what's been inside of it and what's been outside of it. It really starts to disappear. And what we're allowing ourselves to do today as time is expanding is we're allowing the illusion of time to begin to thin and disappear, so we're able to recognize time as an illusion, as science explains to us, and we're able to function outside of the constraints of it. So reconnective healing is very interesting because it contains everything we've had access to. So it's old, but it's also giving us things that we haven't had access to before. Aspects of light and information that have existed outside of our balloon of time. So they are not old. They're timeless. Yes. But they are here for the first time. So they are simultaneously new. So step one is to let go of the techniques to access the entirety of the energy. And then the gift that comes with that is, as time expands, we move beyond that energy into aspects of more coherent light and different aspects of information than the scientists feel that they have actually witnessed here on Earth prior to now. Well, in other words, we are reconnecting with our truth, our fullness. What a lot of people say they experience when they have a life after death experience, or what some people call a near death experience, when they return to that light and they experience the truth, the fullness of who and what they are. And we're learning how to bring more of that consciousness into our existence on this plane here on Earth.
Right. Yeah, I fully agree with you. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons I was very happy to have you on the show is because most of the people that I meet that are healers have the concept of still applying the old techniques, and I felt myself a little bit out of the scope, because for me, I like things easy. It's not just about the fact that you're bringing in, you're focusing on the whole, but I like things simple. I don't need to dwell into or go into all the depth of the problem, although it's nice to be able to if it's necessary. But the ability to be able to actually, you know, just do it and not worry about how it's getting done or how many times you have to do it or anything like that is great. I also believe in the concept and everything you said about quantum physics, because I also talk about that as well. So, I mean, it was just very thrilling to have, you know, it's like a breath of fresh air to have someone that is along the same lines. I mean, granted, you have your specific, your very unique perspective of it.
Well, allow me, if I will, to touch on two things that you said. Mm-hmm. One about the ease. It's not about it being easy. It's that being easy becomes a gift of transcending the fear-based superstitions and rituals that have been surrounding healing, which our inner voice of truth that you are listening to within yourself, for example, has been telling us it's time to reclaim our power. We don't need to do that any longer. See, every choice we make, every action that we take comes either from fear, lack, concepts of limitation, the illusion of darkness, the illusion of separation, or it comes from love, prosperity, abundance, light, oneness, and unity. And we cannot facilitate or give a gift that we are unwilling to step into and accept ourselves. We cannot stand in fear in the healing world, protecting ourselves with white flames and purple flames and gold flames and pulling up make-believe zippers in front of ourselves and trying to shake off what we perceive as negative energy and spare ourselves off with alcohol and soak in apple cider vinegar baths to cleanse ourselves. We can't stand in that fear and mm-hmm. facilitate healing that does not reside in fear, it resides in love. We can't stand in the need for control, bringing this percentage of the energies from the earth and this percentage from the heavens and bringing this clockwise and this counterclockwise, and really, truly access the abundance of healings that resides in freedom, which includes the freedom of us being able to observe without judgment, to be the witness and the witnessed, the seer and the seen. We can't stand in lack and limitation, adding crystals and necklaces and wands and special jewelry that's supposed to bring in healing frequencies from Sirius or the Pleiades, and step into true healing, which resides in the abundance factor, which includes us recognizing our own abundance, that we, by ourselves, without all of these instrumentations and those silly little pyramid hats and things, that we are more than abundantly enough. This is where healing is, and it's time today that without judgment or putting down, accept and bless and thank and love those steps we've taken, the Reiki steps and the other technique steps and things like that, but recognize that they were steps and that we can't step into our role unless we allow everyone else and everything else to play its role, including each of those steps, and they can't play their role until we step up off of them. We've got to acknowledge the fears and the controls we've been hiding behind, pick them up, cradle them and love them and walk with them one step at a time into the light and allow light to do what light does best, which is to show us that the darkness never existed in the first place. It was simply where we didn't allow ourselves yet to fully embody and encompass the truth of the light that we each are.
Yes.
Not that
yes.
I have an opinion on the subject or anything.
Right. Yeah. The interesting part is, and before we start talking about the book, you basically started out of your office, obviously, and then it just gradually expanded. And I know now you're teaching worldwide, so your work is renowned worldwide. Can you share a little bit how that also took place?
Well, you know, I started talking about it and sharing it, and people asked me to teach it, and I found that there was a way to let them to talk about the philosophy, the consciousness of it, allow them to feel it, show them how to really access it, let it become second nature. And one person tape recorded a talk that I gave and sent it off to a publisher, to Hay House, who turned it into the book called The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, which is now in 39 languages. I'm on the road for about 45 weeks a year teaching this to, you know, more countries than I can count. I've trained close to 100,000 people, I think, maybe in about 70 countries. I speak, you know, when this first started happening, I probably couldn't have made it into the hospital through the back door in the emergency room if I was driven up in an ambulance. And now I speak at hospitals, universities. I'm invited to be staff on universities as well in their physician assistant and other training programs. Even we even present this at the United Nations to this work. So it's a whole big shift. And what I do is I teach these seminars. I just flew in tonight from Denver. We just taught one in Denver. I've been teaching in Europe and Australia and all around the globe. And what happens at each of these seminars, and you can find one in a city or a country near you if you just go to the website, which is just like, you know, the process is called The Reconnection. The website is thereconnection.com. But what happens at these seminars is that I'll give a 3-day presentation on a Friday night. We talk about the history of the work, the theory, the philosophy, the science. We will bring up people from the audience and give live demonstrations of the healing so you can witness the reality of this or maybe even experience it yourself. And we give everyone there an opportunity for you to feel it in your hands. So for instance, this year there are a few more seminars in North America. We're doing Newport in November. We're doing Newport Beach, Toronto, London. Then we're doing one in Sydney and one in Mexico City. But what will happen on Saturday and Sunday is it's very different than that Friday night because it's a real, true working seminar. It's a workshop. I mean, I demonstrate a level of this work from the stage. So let's say you come to the seminar. You'll be in the audience. We'll demonstrate clearly a level of this work from the stage. Then we'll all go to massage tables. So you might stand at the head of a massage table. Someone else will lie on your massage table. The teaching team and I will walk around to each of the tables. Each of your hands will take your hand. We will show you how to actually feel this, how to find it, how to feel it, how to access it. And you will witness right in front of your very eyes, that person on your table will start to go into involuntary movements. Arms will kick, legs will shake. We'll show you how to change the way you're doing it or how to enhance it, make it stronger. You'll see fingers moving and eyes darting back and forth. Then we'll go back to our chairs, talk about what we learned, discuss the philosophy, more of the science, question and answer, demonstrate a new level of the work, go back to the massage tables again, and work on a new level of it. And by the end of that weekend, one weekend, not 6 years or 3 months, but by the end of one weekend, I can pretty much make you two promises, which are A, you will be able to do anything and everything in the way of healing that I can do. And B, you will be able to do anything and everything in the way of healing that any human being anywhere on this planet can do, whether they were raised by monks in a cave in a mountaintop in Tibet, fed grains of seed, each one blessed by its own lama, which of its own lineage, or whether they moved to a church in Brazil and changed their otherwise perfectly good last name to Of God. Because today, it's not about the story. It's not about the story. It's about the demystification of the healing process. It's about us each stepping into recognizing that there is no one special person to go to any longer except for that one special person you see looking back at you when you look into the mirror.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. We still are a little bit stuck in that process of needing a story. And you're right, absolutely. When you heal, you let go of the story. There's no need for the story anymore. Tell us a little bit now on, obviously, the book, Solomon Speaks on Reconnecting Your Life, is the story that actually initiated this process. Tell us a little bit about, because I have read, like I said, I've been reading the book. However, our listeners may have not. And so I encourage people to go out and buy it. And Dr. Eric Pearl and Frederick Ponslov, Solomon Speaks on Reconnecting Your Life.
Well, you want the story about how this came about. It's probably
right. Talking about who Solomon is and the fact that there's other entities involved, I guess, would be a good way to I don't want to say too much. I'd rather hear you talk.
Well, let's try it this way. So the healings have begun in my office back in when it first started. And suddenly what happens is one of my patients, who was a patient before the healing started and had gone out of town, comes into the office for an adjustment, expecting chiropractic. I gave him his chiropractic adjustment. I told him to close his eyes and relax. And when he did, I held my hands near him. And what I saw was his head jerk back, his eyes began to rapidly dart back and forth, his arms began to move, his lips parted, his mouth opened in a way that I could see his tongue moving. His tongue was moving in a way that it was clearly forming vowels and air was audibly escaping through his mouth. As I would move my hands to different positions, the air sounds would get weaker or stronger, and then the sounds condensed themselves into a voice.
Right.
And the voice said, "We are here to tell you to continue doing what you are doing. What you are doing is bringing light and information onto the planet." Well, a few days later, it happened to three other patients. They said those first two phrases, "We're here to tell you to continue doing what you are doing. What you are doing is bringing light and information onto the planet." Then two of them added, "What you are doing is reconnecting strands." But one of them said, "What you are doing is reconnecting strings." This first patient, Fred Ponslov, came back in later that week and said, "What you are doing is reconnecting strings." A few days later, it happened to five other patients. All in all, over the next 3 months, over 50, as in 50, over 50 different patients of mine lost consciousness and spoke six verbatim phrases, and I just gave you the first four. But then at the end of the 3 months, it stopped. I mean, it just came to a quick sputter and stop. It wasn't coming through anyone, except it continued coming through Fred. Now, to me, you know, I was looking at those phrases. I was wondering what I had done wrong. Why did it stop coming through people? First I thought nothing could be more weird. Then I didn't know what I had done wrong with it. But I realized that the whole purpose that it came through 50 different people was so I couldn't really discount it as it continued coming through Fred. So I would have sessions with Fred where we would sit down, I would talk to this voice, we would record them. I later had them typed up by a medical transcriptionist who must think I'm insane. And we held on to these these are ongoing since as early as 1994. So it's really about 20 years, and Fred and I lost touch, and then we got in touch again. And I said, I think it's time that we release this. And so we did. But it's hard to explain what this is. First of all, I sort of hate using the word channeling, and I don't really use it in the book anywhere, I don't believe, because of the baggage that's attached to it.
Absolutely, Good point.
And there's so many people out there saying, "Oh, I'm a channel. And you listen to the material and it's not channeled information. It's either fortune telling or it's doom and gloom or it's someone trying to bring in information with a bad imitation of a Scottish or an Irish accent or something. I mean, yeah, they don't have an Irish accent in another dimension. They have an Irish accent in Ireland. That's why it's called Irish. I mean, there are just so many things about it, but when you listen to true channeled information, it's multiple things at once. First of all, it speaks directly to you, and this was speaking directly to me, but not personally to me, Eric Pearl, you will meet a tall, dark stranger in 10 days. It was speaking to me, Eric Pearl, who is here accepting a challenge to step forward and bring a light of a new level of truth and consciousness onto the planet. But that was only me for one pinpoint moment. That is each of us. We are being given this challenge, offered this opportunity. And so when you hear this material, when you read it now, as you probably experience, you find that it is speaking just as directly to you. And that's part of the key. It ripples. You read the words again. You read them differently. It ripples and resonates at a level of truth as you read it, as you listen, as you hear it, that as you resonate at this, vibrate at this level of truth, your untruths seem to vibrate out of the system. The things that block us from seeing who we are and being who we are seem to vibrate out of our systems. And whereas reconnective healing teaches you how to access this more comprehensive level of healing, Solomon Speaks on Reconnecting Your Life teaches us how to access deeper aspects of ourselves. And it's hard to explain, but if you want, if you'd like, I can share an excerpt or two from it, and I think we'll get a better feeling from listening to it than hearing me try to describe it.
Absolutely. And please go ahead, do, and I'll ask more questions after you're done, of course.
Okay, so let me... Here, my fingers just opened to one of the manuscripts. Let's see where this takes us.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. This came from, I'm looking for the date on this, February of 1996. There is a lot that needs to be said in various ways. We understand ourselves in a limited fashion, and we need to carry this understanding as a life process. It is the unveiling of a multifaceted force within our life. We need to peel away the exterior so that that internal being shines through to those we come in contact with. This eternal soul that resides within our framework is being covered up in many ways by our fears and apprehensions. And in your work, and it doesn't necessarily mean your work as a healer, and it also does, but in our work on ourselves and who we are, in your work, that is what you need to do. You need to unveil your soul. It is not a simple process. And this stripping away of ego is an eternal process. This selflessness that must shine through the being that can reach in without interference. Once that pure force shines through without it being refracted by various mindsets, it will flow in a more direct manner. Once you allow your soul, that egoless purity, to come through, that is almost a common denominator in that it has the ability to automatically fuse with the frequency of the person you're coming in contact with. So your job in this process is to strip away the defense, strip away the mind, strip away the control mechanisms, the techniques that you have in this plane. Let them go. Let them be a part of an exterior that has nothing to do with you, and present that soul in the room. It will automatically do the work. That energy is the common universal language of the cosmos. It is understood immediately and is felt intrinsically.
Yes, that definitely speaks to me incredibly, because when I first learned to meditate about 20 years ago, I realized that that's exactly what was happening, what you just described. I've been confronting, as soon as I started dedicating myself to meditation and spirituality overall, all my fears just started. It was a point in time in my life to confront each fear, and each fear was presented to me. As I overcame one, the next one would come. So I totally agree with that, with what you're describing, absolutely. And it does speak to the individual as well as the whole. So that's very, very powerful, what you just shared with us.
Yeah, I teach people at the seminars. I explained, I said, you know what? We really do need to learn to step through our fears with wisdom, of course. I mean, if you're afraid of jumping off the Empire State Building, don't do that. There's no wisdom in it. But I say, start off with don't jump into the huge things necessarily. Look at the little things that flavor our lives with fear. For instance, on a Friday night when I'm getting people ready for the weekend, seminar, I'll say to them, look, for instance, let's say tomorrow morning you're coming down to the seminar and you're wearing a lot of black and you go, oh, I don't know, it's a healing seminar. Maybe I should put on my healing colors. Don't go upstairs and put on your healing colors. Go back to your hotel room, put on all black, and don't cheat. Don't put on purple underwear. The worst thing that could happen, the worst thing could happen is you'll die. And if you do die, then you'll be all right anyhow. And if you don't die, you'll have just stepped through one conscious fear. And every time we step through one conscious fear, 1,001 fears that we're not even aware of meld away with us. Our propensity to attract or live a fear-based life melts away with us. And as we do this one fear a week, for example, we'll have let go of over 52,000 fears. By the end of that very first year, I mean, we'll become more and more light. And as we allow ourselves to become more and more light, we feel no more need to protect ourselves because light has nothing to be afraid of because darkness doesn't exist. It's just the absence of light. If darkness existed, we could sweep it up, put it into a paper bag, and stick it out with the trash. Darkness is merely that place where we have not allowed ourselves to shine as the light that we are.
Yes, absolutely. Now, the interesting part I found about what you said a few minutes ago, and I'd like to touch up on that too, is you were doing, you had about 50 people now giving you confirmation of the same thing. And I know that you were still skeptic up to that point. So at what point in this process of this new life that you were kind of given, did you find yourself finally becoming more and more comfortable with what you did?
Yeah, it wasn't really one point necessarily, although I guess there must have been some turning points, but it's really an ongoing process with some interesting things along the way. For example, here, I'll tell you the story. When I was, I don't know, I know I was under the age of 5. I remember I told my mother, I said, oh, I just had a bad dream and I knew it was a dream, but I couldn't wake up from it. And it was, you know, it was a horrible experience. Bad dreams are frightening experiences for children. And my mother said to me, you know what? Next time you're having a bad dream and you know it's a dream, blink your eyes 3 times really hard. And last time, hold your eyes really hard, wide open until you wake up. And I've got to tell you something. Guess what? This really works. I mean, it's a great thing to teach kids. I did it. It really works. Right. Now, fast forward to, I'm waving my hands in the air. People are having healings. Bodies are moving and voices are coming out of people. And I don't know what's happening. And one morning, a few months into this, I remember I'm about to leave my home to go into my office. And I just locked the front door. And I realized from the angle where I'm standing facing the front door, no one can really see me. And I thought to myself, What if this is some kind of a dream? What if for the last 3 months, I'm really in a hospital bed somewhere in a coma, and all of this is just my delusion that I'm living in? And so knowing that no one could see me at that early hour of the morning, I stood there facing the doorway, and I blinked my eyes 3 times real hard, and the 3rd time I held them open, and I did not come out of it. So this is a dream. Well, kiddo, welcome to it. You're in it with me now.
That's a very good story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Sure.
What motivated you to write this book? Obviously, sharing the process of how you got from where you were, being just a chiropractic doctor. I mean, by that I don't mean just a chiropractic doctor, but you know, the actual. It's quite a leap because even today, although science is becoming a little more accepting of what we consider healing, there's still some kind of reactivity and some kind of still non-acceptance to these methods. But I don't think you found this as much. Would that be true? Or
again, as I said earlier, once you overcome your own skepticism, nobody else's matters. There's something I heard a philosopher talk about once who he referred to as the 10-10-80 principle, and I wouldn't bank on the numbers, but the concept is worthwhile. And that is that 10% of the world will listen to and immediately accept anything and everything you have to say about spirituality and metaphysics and anything related just because they want it to be true. They're not evaluative at all. It's preaching to the choir, and in reality, it becomes rather boring rather quickly. 10% of the world will not listen to anything you have to say, even if you present them with 100 double-blind controlled randomized scientific published studies. They will cover their ears, they will cover their eyes, and unfortunately they will neglect to cover their mouths. But the other 80%, the mainstream, most people will approach it thusly. They'll say something to me that makes sense, I'll listen. Say something else that makes sense, I'll enter into the conversation with you. Say something else, and we'll start to see new things similarly together. Here's where we get to make the change. This is what's important. I mean, you know, preaching to the choir is boring. Speaking to people who are just adamantly set on being right and not allowing them to see something, well, you know, never argue with a fool. Why waste your time? Because we're taking our time away from the mainstream where we really can bring about, make a change. And isn't that really what we're here to do? We're here to make a change. So how, in answering your question, how could I really sit on this and keep my mouth shut? I mean, once I got that there was a reality to this, it needed to be shared. And in the beginning, I shared it. I let it be talked about. I went on TV. I mean, even most recently, I was on Dr. Oz. I mean, you know, you don't get much more mainstream than that.
Right.
And I was walled up in my office 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, seeing people flying in from all around the world for healings. And suddenly it dawned on me that I can only touch 10 people a day. And I can only do that, you know, about for as long as I've got the energy to do that. But every person that I teach this to, they can do as many and see and touch as many people as I can. In reality, I mean, this is hard for me to even conceptualize, but I've reached multiple millions of people around the world since that little morning when this started happening in my office. And if I can do this as one person, then just one other person that I teach can do this. Then in all the people that we've been teaching around the world, think how many people we can reach with an expanded consciousness of what this is all about if we really get behind what we're doing and recognize it as a purpose. You know, I'll give you a turning point. I just got it now. You asked me a turning point. Here it is. So one day I'm thinking to myself, someone said to me, what's the source of this? Is it good? Is it bad? You know, they were still coming from all those fear-based spiritual approaches. What if it's coming from, you know, the devil or something like that? And I thought, well, here's a question you're asking me. I don't really know how to say what the source is. I know that it's a wonderful, good source, but I can't prove it. And I thought to myself, well, what are really the two worst-case scenarios that I could imagine? So worst case scenario A, I die, I show up in heaven or wherever we all go, at the pearly gates or wherever we go, St. Peter or whoever is supposed to be there is there. They open a big book and look through everyone's name. They Eric Pearl, Eric Pearl, Eric Pearl. They find me in the book and they read alongside it the notes, and the notes say, you led a lot of people down a very foolish path. You have to go back and live your life over 600 times. Guess what? That's not really very exciting. But here came worst case scenario number two. I show up wherever we go, St. Peter or whoever is there, opens the book, finds my name, goes Eric Pearl, Eric Pearl, Eric Pearl. We gave you an opportunity to bring about a change in consciousness and an awareness that could have ripple effects throughout the world, maybe throughout the universe, maybe throughout time. And you didn't do it because you were afraid. And guess what? That was the answer I couldn't live with.
Yes.
That was the answer I couldn't live with. I just wasn't going to make my choice out of fear. I was going to make it out of love.
I love what you just said, because that is one of the challenges we all face when we realize our ultimate path and we are caught between what people will think and what we think about ourselves. And that is one of the things that you confront yourself with. And that's wonderful that you were able to overcome that gift. I love the image you presented of going between and before the pearly gates. That was very, very good. I've opened your book here, and interesting enough, it's chapter 13. And the title, and the reason this just called out to me was, problems are not problems, they are lessons to be learned. Now, the reason why this just made me laugh and smile while you were talking is that is a lesson that I've been learning in the last few weeks and months, that we have a habit of talking about things as if they're problems, when in reality, they are opportunities for us to grow. And so I'm just like, wow, this is just repeating the you know, what I'm going through right now and learning to, because it's, you understand the concept and you understand the principle. However, when you apply it, it's not always that simple. So that was very interesting.
You actually just demonstrated that there are three ways to read this book.
Okay.
The first way to read Solomon Speaks, I do not recommend, and that's cover to cover. Don't do it. You won't absorb it. The way to read the book is one of two other ways. A, sit down, listen to the sentences in the paragraphs as you read through them and assimilate them. See how they can apply. Look, say, what can they mean on one level? What can they mean for another? Feel the information as it goes through you. And then put the book down. Mm-hmm. Come back to it later. Continue on. And the third way is what you just did instinctively. Open the book anywhere, and you will most likely find that where your eyes fall is exactly what you need to hear at that moment in your life.
Absolutely, absolutely. How does, I mean, granted, Solomon was a great motivator of getting you to pay attention and focus on the work that was before you. How does Solomon apply today in the continued work you do on a regular basis? You say you travel 45 weeks out of the year. How is Solomon involved in that aspect of your life right now on a daily basis?
Well, you know, we can do reconnective healing by rote. We fall into habits. It's our nature. But what Solomon does is it wakes up the ability for us to access deeper insights of who we are. And as we become fuller human beings, we facilitate higher levels of healing because we become higher levels of light ourselves just from our insights. Here, for example, I just opened a manuscript from May of, same year, 1996. Wonder how that happened. Can I share a little bit?
Oh, of course, please.
Okay. I'm going to, Solomon opens and starts to speak before questions even appear, which is, I find, to be some of the most fascinating information. So here's how he began. I'm going to take you to the very beginning of this session. It says, we, and Solomon often speaks of himself as a we, as you'd mentioned earlier, because there seem to be at least three different entities comprising the entity we call Solomon. Mm-hmm. So here he begins. We are now here to understand your desire. Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
We feel your energy forwarding toward the universe, and we are here now to represent a deeper understanding of that which is. We will begin this session by allowing ourselves to recognize the greatness that dwells within each one of us. We need only begin this by allowing our senses to be cleared of a formality. We need to address this in a very direct way by first releasing those energies that are thwarting our force. And we can allow this to happen by recognizing that our life is eternal, for we are now connected to a much greater self. And in that moment, we release a force that connects us to that greater power. In the process of that thought, we connect to that which is. We need only believe in our soul that we are there, and we are there. a clear channel in which to express the deepest part of our lives. Your soul is eternal in its manifestation. It is here now for the express purpose of recognizing the greater self that we are. We reach this by allowing ourselves to feel that force as it comes through our expression. The expression being our manifestation in this physical form. It is an expression that we have chosen, not unlike a mask of sorts, that we choose to wear in this plane. We give it a deeper inner expression as we connect our soul to the greater universe. And in that way, we feel the forces that propel life in its most basic nature, its most finite, infinite particle of energy. I mean, isn't that exquisite?
Yes.
And it goes on. And just when you think it's reached this point of phenomenal expression, Solomon continues, and there's more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think absolutely. And it reminds me of the onion and the layers of the onion. Each time you're able to see things, even though it sometimes appears to be the same thing, but you're able to see it from a different perspective, which again becomes another learning lesson. So, thank you so much for being with us. I would like to have you again on the show. And, so we'll be in touch with your agent regarding that. It was a pleasure having you, enjoyed it. Sharing this wonderful book again, everyone. Solomon Speaks on Reconnecting Your Life by Dr. Eric Pearl and Frederick Ponsloff. I recommend the reading. And thank you so much for being here.
It's been absolutely my pleasure. I've really enjoyed this interview very much. You're a fun person to speak with.
Well, you know, I think it's mutual. You're a fun person, so it just goes back and forth. So that's wonderful. So I want to wish everyone, would you like to leave the audience? I usually try to leave them with a thought for the week that follows. So in this case, I'd like to give that to you for you to say to them. I'll just say, talk to you guys in 2 weeks. And Dr. Pearl, if you'd like to share or a thought that you'd like to leave the listeners with for
them. Sure. I think what I really want to do is I want to reinforce one point that we touched on a little earlier. Mm-hmm. There is no longer any one special healer in some far off corner of the world that we need to spend our money, pack up our bags, and travel to. That healer is within each and every one of us. If we allow ourselves to recognize it, we will discover it. There's nothing that we need to do to become spiritual enough or worthy enough to be that healer. There's nothing that we can do to become spiritual or worthy enough to become that healer, because we already are worthy by having been born, and we cannot become that which we already are. Our only responsibility is for us to allow ourselves to see it.
Thank you very much. That was beautiful. And everyone, have a wonderful 2 weeks. See you later.